And welcome, welcome, welcome to this evening's discussion or this evening's session of the Business and Economic Zone, wherever you find yourself. Well, especially in the capital, you might be sharing the same overhead situation. I mean overhead in terms of the skies above us being overcast, partially, partly, in some cases, and totally in other scenarios. Wherever you find yourself, I do hope that you might have a raincoat close by if it does decide to rain. If not, well, best of luck to all of us because the rain would not be far. Now, on this evening's Business and Economic Zone, we've got a different point of departure to work from. I say different because it's actually something brought on by the earlier paid for 10-minute discussion that I heard earlier this day with the representative of City of Windhoek, that being Mr. Hiernes, with regards to affordable housing, which it is in itself. And just if you want to know, in terms of some interesting discussion points, he did indicate there how you can make contact with them. But I want us to move away from that anecdote. I'll call it an anecdote for now, because you can see in terms of the broader urgency for affordable housing within Namibia, the need for affordable housing, and also how a local authority ultimately is playing its part, which it is striving to, because let us face it, guys, it's not as easy as saying 1, 2, 3 or the phrase of affordable housing, because there's various other factors always to account for, always to take notice of, always to ensure that these factors either do not greatly influence, neither greatly impact the service delivery component. But if we zoom out from that earlier discussion that took place, it's key to note here that affordable housing in the developed world, or in the developing world, in the developing world is a challenge. It is. This is even something that has been noted from the highest organizations on our earth, on our planet, down, taking a look at the African scenario. Now for once, I want you to ignore the geopolitical conflict zones on the continent, and you've got to factor in the somewhat stable zones that also still exist on the continent. For example, us as SADC, we are a stable zone. To investors, we look like the best partners in investments, and as well as also to do business with, as well as also to partner up with and have and look at initiatives that are uniquely for us in our own African sense. And these are all bonuses that count in our favor, us and obviously the other SADC partners here. The other important thing also to factor in is that, for once, also try and ignore, for example, if we have to look at it in a sense of cultures, ignore for once that North Africa is predominantly Muslim, and that they also have a different approach towards possible affordable housing and how local authority governance would be structured. I'm asking you, to work in a scenario of ignoring certain unique traits and factors, things that you would find uniquely on this continent, uniquely. Because as mentioned in my previous Business Economic Zone discussions, is that if we had to look at modernization or urbanization for that matter, and I'm not talking about the discussions I had back in August, back in July and in June, especially ones looking at transport as well as also the rate of urbanization or the expected rate of urbanization being forecasted for the continent. Affordable housing is part and parcel of that entire discussion. It is. You cannot ignore it. It is. And I also want you to ignore for the time being in our discussion for tonight, the existence of rapidly increasing fuel prices for our transport. Yes. I want you to ignore that. And it's not to say that a rapidly increasing fuel price within a country does not impact service delivery for that, you know, that links into affordable housing. Nor am I saying you should ignore it as if it does not impact the sale price, for example, of just the earth or the erven or the property. I'm not saying that. I'm just asking you, take this out, and then let's look at just the affordable housing challenge, the affordable housing component. Because obviously these other factors do impact them. These other factors do have a buy-in. It's almost like an automatic buy-in that they have, or an association, or an automatic allotment that they get in affordable housing. It's automatic. Now, when we look at the continent's challenge, what the United Nations themselves said in a report, this is part of my literature, also to assist me in tonight's discussion. And the Undersecretary General then, who was also the executive director of the UN Habitat organization or sub-body, indicated that adequate housing their discussion from the United Nations side. Now, I'm only going to work from this report side, but also from another report that comes actually, which is actually a research report that comes from a University of Singapore, the Nanyang Technical University or Technology University, where they also had like a little report based upon Africa's challenges or housing, affordable housing challenges. Understand here, guys, Africa is the biggest continent. It is the biggest continent with probably the smallest population sizes. That's under certain metrics in comparison to its population size. But Africa is the biggest continent. The question born out of that is, you know, if there's so much land for the inhabitants of the continent, why are there almost no success stories? Now, this gentleman, Juan Clos, because I can't say John, it's not, you know, or even though his name spells it, but you can see it's a Juan. Dr. Juan Clos, he was the undersecretary back then in 2011, and also the executive director for the UN Habitat. He noted here that even though there were countless studies, research projects, and also reports that have been undertaken to look at individual housing needs, projects, and programs, there are no contemporary studies that have compared and contrasted housing conditions, policies, and approaches on a regional nor a global scale. Now, he indicates this in terms of looking at what each continent or each zone in the world's needs, housing needs are, because as I mentioned just last week, Friday or Thursday night last week, the expected global population size is going to hit the 8 billion.
Kukuruga na yowamba, kukuningsa ozere, nukusespika na umpito domgara mokagura mkisigemeke. Ramangako, uwera o HIV. Ayo, kukupopera, tani kuiruga na maoko uko. Tokoras gara, ninkawa kurugane yowamba. Mokutura mwe hundiro liye yowamba zuma okoko, zimo guwana kuma pukuru gomanzi. Tumako WhatsApp kwa nomoro zoe utantandatu zime, tatwe utantane, mbali ntambali, mbali ntane. Ndidingura kwa Facebook, kwa VMMC Namibia.
Now coming back from that quick break, the some of the key things in terms of what Klaus indicated towards and why I just ended off before the break was the global population size is estimated and forecasted to hit the 8 billion mark end of this year, 2022. And as part of this insights with regards to this report that Klaus Stem at the UN Habitat had compiled, which is based upon series of reports because they each look at a continent and its needs. Klaus himself adds here that although the size and overall characteristics of the global housing sector does vary markedly across these regions, and indeed their countries, common to all is the fact that obtaining and retaining housing that is adequate and affordable is a serious problem for large proportions of the global population. He also adds in that the unfortunate scenario is that housing affordability remains a challenge and is worsening due to, amongst others, the economic effects that were stemmed from the global financial crisis of 2008. Now remember, this report was authored in 2011 to give a contemporary view of situations then. And the global financial disaster or crisis actually stemmed from the property industry or the property market in the United States and in the UK. And then he also added in the other compounding a factor, which was the increasing severity of disasters and conflicts where we currently are. Now, unfortunately, I asked you to subtract disasters and not disasters, but conflict zones. And which in both place an additional strain on already stretched land and housing resources. So the important thing here is, as I mentioned, if you had to look now at Africa and they've divided up into its blocks or into its little clusters of association. I call it association because you can go east, west, south, and north. And then central, obviously. Now, central, in its own right, is stable. It is stable, but there is one very good template coming out of central. And unfortunately, guys, it is still... It once again is Rwanda, because the urbanization discussion, if you have to look at it, because ultimately affordable housing does speak to urbanization. But if we had to look at a scenario coming from Rwanda itself, the Nanyang Technical or Technological University from Singapore, the NTU University from there, in this report that this other report that is part of my literature, what they indicated was that their question firstly was, how does Rwanda tackle their urbanization challenge? Now, many of the cities below the Sahara Desert, sub-Sahara, constantly face challenges of ensuring that urbanization generates sufficient economic growth, because they're always linked in tandem. It's almost like to say, if there is prosperity to be expected within an economic sphere for a country, you know, it should translate into other sort of like it materializes or translates in one or other factor or facet. Either this could be jobs, or this could be that you can own assets like a car or specific other things, or that you can rent in a decent neighborhood, or that you can, if you now decide to marry, you and your partner, you guys can together afford a home loan, stuff like that. Or you can afford the car that you guys wanted to buy if you already have a place to stay. Those kinds of scenarios in terms of economic growth or sufficient economic growth. You know, it starts spilling over into various sectors in a country's economy. And in most cases, some of those are also about providing decent jobs. But I see I've got a caller on, so let me first get the caller on. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yeah.
Hello? I'm sorry, sir. I don't speak Oshiwambo. I speak only in English.
Okay.
Anything that you want to add on tonight's discussion?
Yeah.
Anything that you want to add on tonight's discussion?
I want to put you on here.
For what, sir? You are already on air, but what do you want to add? What do you want to say? Is there something you want to add on the business and economic zone?
they take it.
All right, so just hold on.
Speak your mind while respecting the opinions of others.
How can you say Namibia was brought on a silver platter when so many people were massacred?
No, that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean on the silver platter
in terms of the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. You know, there were schools, there were roads, there were...
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
To grab that victory against Ivory Coast will be a big one for us. It will be the first.
Now, getting back from our quick sort of like break right there, and just getting into where we left off, the important thing here to remember, guys, is from the discussion about, you know, how affordable housing or economic prosperity feeds into the affordable housing component is a question of that it usually is a result, or not a result, but linked or in tandem with a component that speaks to economic prosperity in one end, meaning people can afford various kinds of assets, afford various kinds of sort of like buy-ins or investments. And this all translates down into further consumption. If you now need to encapsulate it into one term, into further rates of consumption, as well as also providing decent paying jobs, or jobs that provide, that have a decent paying standards. Now, unfortunately, the template that exists out there is that there is an insufficient supply. An insufficient supply to mitigate or to equal up to the demand for affordable housing. It's an unfortunate scenario. Second on that is also within Rwanda itself. Now, remember, guys, the country of Rwanda is as big as the Comas region. Rough estimate. Slightly bigger. Let's say slightly bigger. Because Rwanda can fit in Namibia, but Rwanda has 5 to 6 to 7 million people, I think. Safe estimates as well. Now, for them, in their example, in Gihara and Ruyenzi, which are two suburbs which surround the capital of Kigali. Now, the delivery of affordable housing had placed the local administrators there under pressure because there's a major demand. Now, the districts have also had to revisit their master plans or accept land use adjustments after areas that were zoned for agricultural production became fragmented. So firstly, there was an initial sort of like direction for these specific zones. But then obviously you had a different demand jumping up, a different demand putting up its hand. The second scenario of this also is that others in this Rwandan example have also tried to tighten zoning rules in a bid to protect farmland from the encroachment being done by property developers. So what happened was that Rwanda, as a landlocked country, decided to go through a conversion of arable land to residential purposes, or not that, but to convert arable land, land that can be used for farming practices, to be converted into residential purposes, actually poses a major risk for the long-term food security in that country, which is a challenge in that country's example. But that Rwanda only features as an example in terms of the challenge because it's a small country. It's very small. It's probably one of the smallest African countries on the continent. But they decided to make efforts in terms of growing the supply of affordable housing by extending tax breaks to developers and investors focused on just the residential segment. So, back in 2012, they on a study that was conducted in Kigali, they estimated by this year, 2022, that the capital of Kigali will need 340,000 new housing units, with a 78% demand for new housing concentrated in the lowest income quintile, where households earn less than $350 a month. So $350 is about $5,000 Namibian dollars under current exchange rates. which is similar to the discussion that the gentleman from Suryavanduk had here earlier. Something similar, because he also noted that they as a Suryavanduk had identified that there are categories of income whereby in various prospective property owners will be classed under or will fall under. This is key, guys, because it actively aims to speed up affordable housing. Actively. Now, our scenario is slightly more unique. You heard that there were two examples. There were two initiatives. Kickstarted one in collaboration with a multi-stakeholder component, and the other one being the local authority's own initiative. Both these items are key, because both these items provide a sense of value. For some reason, the word value has just become my go-to word in the past 2 weeks, but it does provide a sense of value. The other downside is there's obviously disproportionate demand, meaning the demand way outstrips the supply. It even dwarfs it. What I mean is that the supply is so small as opposed to the demand that might be there. So, in Namibia's sense, slow but steady. Slow but steady. We're getting into that role. We're getting into that factor. We're getting into that quarter. Just in last month, there was the other interview that I had with a representative from the Shack Dwellers Federation of Namibia, when they had delivered homes in Okkarara. Predominantly, the recipients were women. And we also have to understand, in most cases, yes, you want to look after the most vulnerable in society. And women, the elderly, and children have been classified around the world as being more vulnerable, unfortunately, than men. It's not to spark up any kind of gender debate. It's how the powers that be, economists, politicians, you name it, doctors, everyone, they view things. It's if you wanna look after society, you go and look after the most vulnerable first. So you start from the most vulnerable, the most potentially exposed, and you work your way in. And this is good. I mean, I can't remember the exact number that was delivered, but it was a decent amount of houses. Affordable housing. And remember, that's only in one region. So you start seeing these initiatives, these supply, you know, these sort of like jump-starting supply components, scenarios spring up throughout the country, which is good. It still does not entirely, you know, try to stem the picture that I already spoke about in last month with regards to how Windhoek will still maintain its superior position, how Windhoek will still be the one needing all the resources before anyone else in the rest of the country. We'll quickly go to a short break after this.
The International University of Management, IUM, with the Umbo no number no wish we faguja, or Manjirongo or Dratia Academic Year 2023, or Kapatruka, and the Rapa if you record a paparo, more education, Ukarolong if you got it a wufe or health and social science, or show my fano, information and communication technology, or strategic management and leadership, Natai Monica, no tourism, or show hospitality and event management, business administration, Ekuterera. Environmental studies and postgraduate studies at Shota de Monica. We're there, Oto Monica ko website, www.ium.edu.na. Ilo tarere po embiro da IUM, di kulipo pepe, mo venduka, mo nkure nguru, mo nkwe diva, no mo mpae, Ota de Monica. Wereru tuhangi kongodi ya venduka 061 ongodi ne natonatu oma wavedi hamano inda komesho kufetokoro lirimonjira toiko mbona kuiwa inerao pamwena IUM.
Whether you're a fat cookie or a potaiki, 20K could be on your way. Stay tuned. NHP, we're about you.
Hello Namibia. Endera pamwenate uyuni Walela Pay. Lela Pay onkaro ompu wa mafutiro no kuthisa ngoka haguningwa pamkaro gongodi hoka tevuru okutuminako omatumaraka goe agehe na ngoka gopaipindi no taga dhanwa no kutuwa mombepo esimbo ojo tuunjoka. Otovuru okuningashike ko Lela Pay. Otovuru okutura omatumaraka goe mombepo torongisa oka epa ko Eagle FM nenge ka imba nenge hoka ka Lela Pay nenge utire moshifosho The Villager ni kwao ya webapo. Otovuru okuninga omafutiro goe. Otovuru ishe okuturako omatumaraka goe ginima ya yoroka. Ngashi, omatumaraka gorukozi, omatumaraka gomahio, omatumaraka gomaharero ya mbeko gomabaro, na matumaraka gokwarukehe nguka wahara utseithire oshiwana ashikesho monami pia, okuza warapo doranda tu ni thiringa itano metumaraka kehe. Lela Pay, oharongo ngini. Konga oka epa ko Lela Pay ko Play Store nenge ko App Store eto katura kakarekeri mongo dioe. Paturura o akauntae o shari eto turamo o mausemba goe. Inda ko kanjato koe ki mariwa eto turako o shimariwa to uditha shoka topurwa uudite. Shampa wa mana okuturamo o mausemba goe hogora kucha awahara okurungitha ehangano nenge o vendaini o Eagle FM nenge o The Villager. Ronge kitha etumaraka joe eto simdimpoka pashangwa send utume. Shampa watumo etumaraka joe otari turwa ko Eagle FM, Imba, Lela Pay, Ninge, ko The Villager. Ona ishe umpito yokuturako irongwa moyoe yokomake. Tumina inimawe ko digital etomalaiti.com notai urikwa menderero. Opo ukare waguza kukara ndithi, tuzengera nena kono rajeta tuimwe, mbari nora, ndatungoi, hamano, ndatu ndatu. Ninge kono rajeta tuimwe, ndatu mbari, ketatu, 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 ne, no nora yeriari. Lela Pay, yimo nena, nena, tai adika ko App Store, noko Google Play Store.
Now coming back from our extended break, it's not to say that, you know, the situation in Namibia looks bad. It doesn't look bad. Well, it potentially does look bad, but here's the thing. Just in a recent discussion this afternoon with one of my colleagues here at the studio, he actually indicated that a lot of people from various parts of the country actually are just keen on moving to Windhoek. And once again, as I mentioned, it's the unfairness factor that Windhoek enjoys. I do not know if it's the bright lights, luster, meaning, you know, it's the attraction, or it's the sense of, you know, it's to the capital. There might be opportunities, or if it's the sense of saying, yeah, there is potential opportunity there. I asked him, is it a sense about that? And this colleague of mine said, well, he doesn't know because everyone just says they don't want to stay where they are. Especially where which zone he's talking about is predominantly in the north. He says that people don't want to stay there. They don't want to look for jobs there. They want to come to Windhoek. Now, once again, as I mentioned, this speaks to the internal migration patterns. Once again, also factoring Windhoek's unfair advantage over the rest of the country. Now, since we've got this scenario, these scenarios speaking about affordable housing and affordable, you know, what does it look like? Why is it a challenge scenario? Getting back to that Rwanda example, taking a look at their sort of like key view, is that since the demand was so high at that stage of 2011 or 2012, the property developers there were struggling to lower the cost of newly built residences. So it's about allowing, making it also affordable enough. Adding on to that, it was also the one way that could help on this matter was by having a government provide basic services such as electricity, sewage, water, and road infrastructure. Now, these are usually the things that we would also first require. These are standards we would require. You would require at least that there are some service, one or other service component in an area if you want affordable housing. It doesn't have to be a tarred road, but at least it is, something that looks like a road. As long as it's not a tweespoor. A tweespoor is that thing that you find on farms or in game drives. You know, it's just the two tracks. No, that's not a road. That's a tweespoor. No one wants a tweespoor. So as long as it's not a tweespoor, for sure, you know, then you've got some roads. But it's key to note here, guys, because doesn't matter how you look at it. Affordable housing will still be a problem, will still be a headache going ahead. It will still be. The one key thing is, even though, and this is the unfortunate thing about sometimes looking at a reality sense, even if you try to solve unemployment, there will be one or other compartment in a country society that will not be fully serviced, will not be fully, you know, assisted, will not be fully alleviated. Let me first get this call in. Eagle FM, good evening.
Yes, good evening, sir.
How are you doing, Uncle Bona?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. Why you sound so down, Uncle Bona? What happened?
No. We are just trying to reflect and it's war, my friend. I'm trying to think about the comparison that the people always make between Rwanda and Namibia. I'm not against the progress there. I don't know when Rwanda got its own independence, maybe some many years back, as compared to us. I listened to during the closer to the education conference that took place, and how Mimisinkam was making some kind of comparison with our education and Kigari there, and for free education and all these other things. Now you came in again with the issue of housing, and I see that when you look at the figure, you discover that those people are also struggling.
They are.
We are actually on the right path.
They are.
So, but when you hear some of these analysts, I'm not talking about your guest. No, I'm talking about people like Uncle Bwana, who comes here with different views and trying to confuse matters, signing, promoting Rwanda in almost every aspect of life.
Yeah.
Better than us and this and this and that. Even when Kangame, the president, want to stay more, people are even supporting him. Yes, even here they are saying, yeah, it's good because he's doing well. But I'm saying, what about the limit, the law now that limits that thing? Is there not somebody who can do better than him? But you see, so I just wanted to get that thing, because sometimes when I play through, I look at some of those areas and I see, but why is people just promoting Rwanda? I mean, yes, Rwanda at our expenses. So it is very, very important always to, they say, I don't know what that proverb says. They say they always exhort things outside, but in their own thing, they despise them, and that is the mentality of the our people, of ourselves. And so much that when they come, when they do this, we need that. We need to have some kind of fruitful conversation and say, yes, in this area, at one point they ask them, give us the statistic here, the comparative statistic. Nobody could give. They just say, hey, Rwanda. He's doing well. And this other one. So now I hope we are here listening to your lesson now. and draw a lesson, a very important, a very good lesson there, so that at least when we do our comparative analysis, at least it makes sense and not failing, you know. So I just wanted to just make that remark.
Yeah.
That I didn't know that Rwanda is also struggling.
and the thing is, Angabona, if you have to look at, well, to answer part of your question, because I can hear you have a question, it is a lot of people like running to them as a textbook example. But like you also noted, we have our own unique challenges. They have theirs. Because the first thing is, we've had a very progressive democracy. We have three presidents. We've, in our short democratic existence as a country of 32 years, we've already had three different presidents. They technically have only had, I think, two or three. But I'm speaking under correction. And Kagame is the longest serving. He is the longest serving after 1994. Second on to that is also Angabona, if you measure Namibia and Rwanda, it's not like for like. And that is sometimes the unfortunate, sort of like disproportionate, allocation of attention that comes through. Because, if you have to look at economic standards, anyone would tell you, look at Nigeria, South Africa, Kenya. If you have to look at education standards, everyone would tell you, work, bounce it from Zimbabwe, maybe South Africa, Kenya, and then you can even go into what's the other country's name? There's another one, which is very small, the Gambia. People don't know how the literacy rates and the economic situation there is in the Gambia, and Gambia is small, so small. Angabona. They've got, you can literally walk from one side of the country to the other side of the country in a day.
I did it.
Angabonek, just go look at a Google map or a map, if you have a map. The Gambia is so small, and they have a coastline, you can walk from one end of the border to the other end, and you will see three different countries. That's how small this, but just for the example, people don't, you know, outside of Africa, they like making comparisons in terms of Rwanda is always this poster child, but they don't look at the other success stories that each country on this continent has, and that what they all bring. And unfortunately also, it's sometimes also some of the legacies that we are left with, because housing is a legacy that we are left with, because we need to cater for everyone.
Apart from that, you look at the migration of people.
Exactly.
So they did migrations and all these things. I think the first people to come here almost in 1990, after independence. So, but it wasn't like this.
Yeah.
So now, when you now look at this kind of migration from rural area to urban now, now you want to blame who now?
Exactly. Because you can't stop people. No. You cannot stop people from moving.
You can't stop people. Exactly. And that's why I say fine, it's good. Sometimes it's good to occupy the land that is serviced, but even if you do that now, how many people are you going how many people are you going to cater for the service plot?
Exactly.
So those are some of the challenges we understand and things like that. But every time people are just blaming
Rogers Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit paratus.africa/NA for more information.
Sorry, Angabona.
So what I'm saying is that it's good for us to reflect and look at the reality of the situation and see how we can craft up some solutions, possible solutions. But if you are blaming the Swapo government for allowing people to come to have the free movement and all these other things, is that realistic?
It's not. Because it would have been there whether or not they would have been, doesn't matter which ruling party would be in power. It's still something within people, because Angabone, here's the thing. You have that right from the constitution. The constitution says you can live anywhere in this country.
Unlike before. Mm-hmm.
And the constitution, unfortunately, gives you that right. What is the word that some lawyers like using? It's uncontested. You cannot stop people from moving. If they want to move,
not at all.
It's their right. And as long as they have the money and the means to move, that's the only conditions that are required.
So it's okay, my brother. Go ahead, but keep on bringing some of these proportionate issues that so that we can see how we can address it. So, but we are on this side trying to observe. But all those things, my friend, let's just face the reality and see what are the urban city, the city here now, they can also facilitate for the movement of the people there. Maybe they can also help those village councillors, those rural towns and all these local governments there to, in order to develop their strategic way of doing things. So that they can also reduce the burden on the city. So it's okay, my brother. Let's always be contextual.
Thanks a lot, Angabona.
Good.
And just where we ended off with, just regarding sort of like the reality. Now, this specific report, the one that took a look at from the Singaporean University, where it took a look at Rwanda as a case study, is important note here, because they realized that even though the state came through with a funding initiative, funding, I mean like a loan, you know, making a facility available. And second on to that was also that there was going to be high interest rates attached to these loans. The unfortunate scenario is that many of the Rwandans then in need, who needed affordable housing, who wanted affordable housing, unfortunately, were low-income earners. And as you heard just from the earlier discussion, I'm not doing a comparison between Rwanda and Namibia. It's not what I'm indicating. I'm taking a look at the continental scenario, because we've already heard of one specific anecdote here earlier today on Eagle FM from the city of Windhoek itself, from the city of Windhoek themselves. But if you expand it across the continent, since Rwanda is consistently made use as the, you know, signature example for the continent in terms of various other service delivery components in order to make life better for their citizens, the notion sometimes has always been that it's the same challenge that you would find almost everywhere else. Now, I remember I mentioned to you, please do not factor in the conflict zones nor the disasters on our continent, because we have to look at the demand component. Another country that was also sort of like viewed at was Kenya. Now, we've got to understand, guys, Kenya has the continent's biggest slums. And it's actually the slum outside, the slum that is in Nairobi, in the capital. I think it has the biggest population. And if you want to know what a slum is, in our terms, in our definition, it's actually informal. It's an informal area. It's an informal settlement. Now, Kenya, in their own way, has taken their own house, you know, home ownership direction in their own unique sense. When the previous president, Uhuru Kenyatta, indicated a goal of increasing the number of affordable housing projects during his term. It's something that we obviously have also seen here in our own country. It is made use of as sort of like a selling point to the electorate. It is a selling point, guys. So we have to own this up as well. It is a selling point. It is made use of as a selling point. But in terms of actual delivery, concrete delivery, that is the gap. That is the gaping hole that everyone keeps asking. Now, even Kenyatta in his term then indicated affordable housing projects and various ones in his term of one of four pillars of his second mandate. Now, remember, his second mandate ended recently. Now, part of that strategy back in April of 2018 was a public-private partnership that will help finance affordable housing in Kenya. It was announced. It was sort of like unveiled. Now, this also, the thing's name was known as the Kenya Mortgage Refinance Company, as the partnership also deemed it, was launched in 2019, or would have been launched in 2019, and was aiming to develop the primary and secondary mortgage markets through the provision of secure, long-term funding for mortgage lenders. The funds would have then been raised by this organization, the Kenyan Mortgage Refinance Company, which will allow banks, that's now private banks, to issue additional 50,000 mortgages in a span of 50 years. So in essence, if you had to look at it from Kenyatta's direction, from his perspective, this was going to be a legacy project. This was something which was signal to his legacy, what he left the country with. At that stage, because this report from this university was authored in, just want to get the date right here before I actually, you know, announce something that's not there, but it was actually authored just before 2018. Oh no, during 2018, sorry. And it's key to note here, guys, that for Kenya themselves is a unique scenario, as I mentioned, because of the being, you know, home to one of the largest slums on the continent, or informal settlement areas. But this ambitious plan itself, guys, by the Kenyan president, had the objective of at least providing or delivering 1 million housing units by 2023, which was next year. They had also, as a country, accumulated a housing deficit of 2 million units. So already, even if you delivered the 1 million, even before 2023, there would have still been a backlog of 1 million. With also, they factored in that the production level at then was less than 50,000 units a year. Far less than the quantity that was necessary to give everybody a roof to live under. The program for Kenya would have also cost them $26 billion in financing. And that was approximately 37% of Kenya's total GDP of 2016. Meaning, Kenya generated $70.5 billion in GDP value. Now, the Kenyan government, if you had to now look at the strategy for financing, what were the, you know, what would have been the avenues for financing, is that the Kenyan government were planning on dropping the cost of a housing unit from $50,000, which would have been about, under current exchange rate, $750,000, to $15,000, which would have made it about $300,000. That 70% drop in that price would have supported the free public land to private land developers scenario, and also the building for access of roads, electricity, and water connection for housing schemes. Meaning, the state has to come in with a services provision, lay the groundwork for the services, provide the connection facilities, and then you can drop the house price. You can drop the property price. Think of it as in a sense of like subsidization. Subsidize one part of delivery, so that the developers can then get in and provide the building. However, you and I know, in reality, the situation on the ground does not always translate to the situation as planned. It does not. It does not. Rwanda indicated it then, in 2012. Even here, Kenya has also indicated it then. And it was even earmarked as a legacy project for Uhuru Kenyatta, the outgoing or the former president of Kenya. And mind you guys, Kenya is a big economy. Kenya by far outstrips Rwanda's potential of GDP production, or, you know, its outputs and what it can collect from its receipts. Now, we already know with Namibia and South Africa, which are deemed as the two most unequal countries, unequal societies on the continent, potentially also in the world, potentially, I say potentially, potentially is used conservatively. But we know about the one in Africa. We are deemed as the two most unequal in Africa. However, we form part of a cluster of countries that are the most stable in terms of governance to do business with, as well as also various other factors that investors look at and also local investors also take into consideration. Because why would you want to do business in a conflict zone? Who wants to do business in a conflict zone? No one. No one, really. Now, as this also only leaves us with about 3 minutes of today's program here on the Business and Economic Zone on your number one talk radio station, it's key to note, yeah, guys, we've not ended here. We've not ended here. We will still be continuing into tomorrow's discussion because I have to look at the entire African scenario as well, just for you to also capture that overall discussion and how it takes it from there. Now, before I sign off, it's also important here to take note of the when the dream, I'll call it the dream of affordable, when affordable housing is not actually affordable on the continent. Now, some of the ideals, and this is now looking at what this Nanyang Technology University report indicated here, was that when housing is constructed for low-income groups, it may remain financially inaccessible or become sub-rented to middle-class groups, meaning that the urban poor continue to live in areas without access to public services like clean water, sewerage, electricity, and paved roads. This is one of the conclusions that this report indicates to. They also noted that this disparity between plan and reality creates an intertwined mix between new residential developments and unregulated settlements that grow up adjacent to them, which is true. It's the same reality situation that was explained just earlier today. Just earlier today here on Eagle FM. Now, you see similarities, but ours is unique to us because it's our demand, it's our market, it's here for Namibians. But when you look at how those that have researched this specific demand item, or demanded or in demand item on the continent, they realize that there's a major disconnection between supply and receiving. Receiving it, you, because you already have the demand and you've already probably gone to your banker or your bank, or you've already tried to access or get in contact with your local authority and you want land, but the supply is not meeting up to the quantity of demand that is there, and those that have received are at such a low level as first was envisaged or planned for. Meaning, if you said that, so let's say there is a demand of 10, and
so, jy het dit gedoen. Jy het jou laat besny.
Yep,
dit was baie dapper. Was dit nie vrek seer nie?
Dit was net so effens seer, maar dis die moeite werd om myself teen seksueel oordraagbare infeksies te beskerm. En dis soveel makliker om skoon te hou.
Wel, as jy dit so stel, dan moet ek dit dalk ook laat doen.
Bra, dis die regte ding om te doen. Man Up, kry 'n besnyding. Om 'n gratis besnyding te bespreek of om meer uit te vind, stuur 'n WhatsApp boodskap na 081-309-2729 of besoek ons Facebookblad by VMMC Namibia.
Now, just before we sign off, just to indicate that if you had, in terms of the example where I left off, if you had 10 houses to deliver, or there was a need for 10, and there was a need, and you can supply the 10, but supplying puts you at a level of actually only being able to supply 2 at a time, which actually means that you cannot meet the delivery time scale. Now, that does bring us up to the end of tonight's discussion here on the Business and Economic Zone. Stay tuned for the matriarch. She is here, full of life, somewhat, yes. Yes, she's even giggling at my dumb joke there. But stay tuned, guys, and this was your Business and Economic Zone on your number one talk radio station.